This is Jody Stone on the 24th of October, 1989, interviewing Babs McLean at her home on Factory Street in Salisbury. First question, which I meant to ask you before I turned it on, is your McLean and the other McLean, were they once the same family and changed it? So I'm thinking of Chuck.
My father's was Chuck's father's first cousin, so we were LAIN originally.
And who changed it?
When my father was in World War One, and then his papers came back and everything was LANE, one of those things, and we just went by LANE.
No kidding.
My father's father is LAIN.
Okay, all right. So tell me about your father. Tell me about you first. Who are you?
Well, there's a good question. Well, I was born in Salisbury up the end of Mountain Road, so I am a true raggy. I spent much of my early years till the fifth grade, I think, in Lakeville. So I lived there in Lakeville and then came up to Salisbury to the Ashman House, which is where Sarum Village is now. And then when I graduated from high school, went into nursing and didn't come back to Salisbury till 1968.
Oh.
So I graduated in 49 and came back in 1968 to resume my nursing at Sharon Hospital. Mm-hmm. By then, my folks had moved up Factory Street, as we call it now, and two houses up where Gertrude
lives. Yes, the countess.
Yes, and then I bought this house in 1955 and moved back here, as they say, in 1968, where I've been ever since. So I was in Hartford, Pittsfield, so I haven't been too far away.
What do you do at the hospital?
I do employee health now.
Okay.
That is, I do physicals for employment and immunization shots and general problems with compensation and workman's comp and that kind of thing. I like it a lot because I deal with people and I like people, Works out good.
Tell me about your family. Now, what did your father do? Where was he born? Here?
No, my father's born in Williamstown. Mm-hmm. And he's from that neck of the woods. His parents lived in Williamstown. And I don't know how things started migrating down here, but he eventually, when he married my mother, moved down
here.
She's
the raggy.
She's the raggy.
Now, who is she? Who was she?
My mother was a ball.
B-A-L-L?
Yes.
Yeah.
And her family were in and out of here. My maternal grandparents are actually, they called themselves New York Dutch because they always were more in New York than that kind of thing. My mother had a sister and a brother who were brought up in the Gilbert home in Winsted. And she was brought up by a couple on the end of Mountain Road, known as the Lampsons. That house is gone now.
That's the Jim Lampson?
That was old Ern Lampson, and I forgot the other Lampson, but she called them Graham and Gramp, I guess, or something, or uncle and aunt or something, but they brought her up. I guess that wasn't uncommon in those days. My mother was married at 15, and I was the fourth child, and she was 22 by then. And she'd already lost her first child with, probably was either diphtheria or a pneumonia when Mary was two, I think. So my mother was an old 22, and I've been through a lot. So she totally had seven children, and six of us are still living.
Who are they?
My oldest brother's Marshall. He's in Florida. Daytona Beach. He's retired now. My oldest sister is Kay Casey. She's the postmaster at Cornwall Bridge. And then there's me. And then my brother Roddy is a crew leader on the state Department of Transportation there. And my brother Michael works at K&E. He's the accountant. And I have a sister Margaret who's married and lives in Fishkill, New York. And she has about seven kids, I think. There's a lot of kids. I don't have any.
So really, she's the only one who moved really out of the area. Right. I'm not on Cornwall Bridge out of the area.
No. No. So she, well, Marsh went to Florida.
Yeah.
Well, no, he went to work down there.
Oh, did he?
And then he just retired this year. Mm-hmm. So he's our first retiree.
Mm-hmm.
He said he never would, but then he did.
Now, so, when you were a child,
mm-hmm.
was this area where we're sitting very populated with raggies, or had people started to buy in from vacation homes?
These houses, if you'll notice, they're predominantly red,
mm-hmm.
were because they were all houses of the factory. And I bought my house from Phil Warner.
I was going to ask you.
As
you're talking his factory.
Yes.
Okay.
And this was the main house. You know who told me this history of this house is Ginny Terry. And her parents.
Oh, Mrs. Terry.
Yes.
Little Mrs.
Ginny.
Terry. Yes.
Her parents lived here.
Uh-huh.
And they had come over from England to work the iron, I guess. And they lived here. So my main house was probably 1860-ish. So it's been added on and all that.
Yeah.
But this was the main house. That's why I have the well outside. And the other houses came to use the well. And this pond was different then, but was part of the grist mill.
Where was the mill?
Well, if you see where those cars are parked.
Oh, that curve there.
There, well, you can still see the remnants of the building. And that was part, and there was a big spillway with a water wheel. And then where Cassandy's was another water wheel, grist mill, of course. And then Phil's factory.
Yeah, I remember that vaguely. Now, where Ubi told me there was a road, is there a road that goes across that water where there used to be houses?
Yes, yes. Down
just
by.
Fell down?
Probably when people, I think George Kiefer owns most of the land, and now it's. We used to call it the Philippi's, where Dr. Fink lives now. Philippi's. There may have been houses in there because there's a bridge across there. I don't remember any of that. But these were all the factory houses up here. And the only new house added in my day is the Whalen house.
Right up there on the hill.
Right up here across.
Yeah,
yeah.
Across, yeah. That's, and
then,
that's new. Really.
And Reggie Lamson's house. But the rest of them were here and part of Phil's. And then he was a good man because he sold these houses very cheap and even took the second mortgage if he couldn't, which he did for me. And was really, I don't know if he ever expected to get his money, but I think he got them from every one of the ones that he sold to. So it paid off.
I hear he was a wonderful man for kids too.
Yes. Yeah, he was... always had a pipe and was always friendly. When he died, I paid off the rest of my mortgage, which was like $11 a month to him as a second mortgage. And I went to Millicent and paid up, I must have owed, you know, $300 or something. She didn't even know anything about it. Had to go through some of the papers there that he had done all of this or how much was owed to him or anything.
What a remarkable story.
Yeah, he really, I think, did a lot that people didn't know about and was the first man to realize low housing was important. So that you could, the people needed a place and it didn't have to be a mansion and that they would work and keep it up. And I think if you look at these houses, it's still primarily the first owners
mm-hmm.
and have done a pretty good job of it. Now it's a high rent district, see?
Oh, of course it is.
So I think it was Factory Street. I won't get into the argument of Washington and Factory Street. It doesn't matter to me. But I think people like to, Washington sounds a little more highfalutin than Factory Street, but its history is Factory Street. Its history is Factory Street. And or Mill Street, whichever you want to call it, because this was an important area then. And the artisans are still, you know, you can go in there and buy things, and it's quite interesting.
Other than Phil's, were there other factories on Factory Street, or did?
I don't know of any other. even as a child, we swam in Factory Pond.
Which is this pond down here, right outside your window?
No. Well, this was called Webb's Pond because Webb's lived here. In my day, you knew houses by the family name, the Webb House or the Ashman House that I moved to, or things like that. We didn't go by numbers and things. But the Factory Pond is down where it's called Vincent's Pond now. Now I think they've named it Pewter Pond.
They have, it says Pewter Pond.
I don't know where the pewter came from, but that's what they call it. That's where the Lovitz used to live there. And some of the, I think one of the Lovitz children drowned in that pond at one time because we were unsupervised, you might say. Mm-hmm. Those were the days when you could go on people's property and they didn't have to worry about being sued and you didn't have to worry about being run off.
Yeah, true.
It was pretty open land. You didn't have a lot of grass because you had a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And kids played on the... Get down. Excuse me. So, but at the Ashman House even, we had 12 acres there, and so we could have a cow and a garden and things like that. So it was... And we had... in the defense factories and went to New Britain. And the guys from here used to carpool and even had an apartment down in New Britain from Monday night through Thursday night and would come home on the weekends and would come home with like $90, which was like $1 million. And I will tell you one, there are a lot of funny stories there, but they had the observation post for airplanes. And because we lived so close and everybody was doing their patriotic duty, my mother took the 2 to 4 a.m., she and Stell McLean. And I laughed because my mother couldn't tell a Ford from a Rolls Royce. I don't know how at night she could tell an airplane from a Japanese airplane or whatever. And if they ever wanted to invade the northwest corner, they should have picked 2 to 4 in the morning. And she used to drag me sometimes because Stell wasn't feeling good, or one or the other, and it was just for company. So I think I was about 12. I was in fifth grade when the war broke out. And on BJ Day, we had a big bonfire down in the middle of, right in the middle of the street.
No kidding.
Yeah, in front of Whitbeck's drugstore and all that. And we just hooted and hollered, and everybody brought out any alcoholic beverages they could. And all my family worked for the White Hart Inn. One time there were 5 of us working there. My mother was a waitress. My grandmother did the salads. My sister was a waitress. I did the silver and glasses. My brother did the dishwasher. And I don't know if you remember the Bouchers.
Oh, sure.
They were so prim and proper and Nazi-like, excuse me. And his bubs. And Mrs. Boucher was like royalty. And my father grabbed her and swung her around from the bonfire when the war was over. So really had a good time. It's typical of kids. We enjoyed the war years because there were lots of excitement, and when the guys came home and all us teenage girls were crazy over them, and it was popular to join up, and it was a popular war, so to speak. And we just wrote to them. And another person I think should be remembered was Charlotte and Bob Barnett. I don't know if you know those people. Well, they lived in a little shack down where it's Doug Ostrander, down beyond where McGarry's live on the other side of the tracks. And she wrote to every guy in the service. Every holiday sent a card. And when we were kids, we used to make fun of her because she was obese and a bit of a character, and Bob was thin. We used to, a very sweet, wonderful person, and there wasn't a guy that came back that didn't go down and say hi to him. They just
That's
appreciated
a lovely
that.
Story.
And I never know what happened to them. And at Christmas time, they went to all the poor houses and delivered Christmas presents, and he dressed up as Santa Claus.
Oh.
So they used to come to the Ashman House, and we just look forward to them, even though she should have been the Santa Claus, but, and they had a gift for everybody. how they did that on a very limited income. I think she took in laundry and stuff like that.
And they had no children?
They had no children, but they were wonderful to kids. Maybe that's why. But really good people. I think that's what's wonderful about Salisbury. There are a lot of characters in Salisbury. It's sort of dying out. Oogie and Bam Whitbeck, probably two of the last. But we used to have what I call like Charlotte Barnett and Stella Sackett. She used to walk in, up this road with a dead squirrel and the tail hanging out of a basket. It'd be 98 degrees and she'd have on a overcoat and pants and galoshes. And she thought she owned this whole street. And she used to always say she'd report you to the testator, you know. And so we'd be outside and she'd say, "You're on my property and I'm going to report you to the testator." And we'd say, "Okay."
Where does she live? Did she live up here?
Yes. She lived up on, what is this called? Riga Lane.
Yeah.
She had a house up there. She's related to Pat Ongley, the Parsonses, I think. But very harmless, wonderful person. But we don't, you know, you don't have a lot of those. They were probably, they're what you would call street people in the city. But they had shelters here and were very kind and very harmless people. Well, Charlie Ashman was a character.
Yeah.
He wasn't so kind, but he was a character. And oh gosh, she used to write poetry for the Lakeville Journal. Oh, what was her name? French poetry. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this on there, but she used to have down on that Doug Ostrander. One time a bunch of the boys during the war, I guess, painted the flag on her gluteus maximus, and she danced on the table. What was her name now?
Good.
She moved up into Taconic.
Really?
I'll probably be sued for...
Is this? Never gave her name.
I know. I'm not going to know. But, yeah, that was a good story going around because one of the boys, one of a very respectable man was there too, who remained nameless, but the other guys shielded him, protected him, and but they could always use his car after that with not much said. So it was one of those things, you know, that happened. And but they used to have good times, simple times, I think, before TV. And now everybody's so conscious of their property, and you see a lot of grass and it's mowed. So you know there's no kids playing out there. My brother-in-law tried to have a lawn once, and he was complaining the kids were playing ball out there in Cornwall Bridge, and my sister said, "The grass will grow after the kids are gone." And
good comment.
Yeah, and the grass does grow after they're gone. Now we want community fields for them, and so there's a lot lost in this owning, you know, so it's... And I do the same thing. I have my pond, and I used to let everybody swim in it until a few things were destroyed, and then by one or two people, most of them were wonderful. And then I was playing lifeguard, or my mother was, most of the time. And so then you worry about insurance. People say you're crazy, and the next thing, you become more selective. And I wasn't going to be here, and I didn't want them just, you know, unsupervised. So it's too bad, but you lose a lot.
What do you do then? Just pass the word that nobody's watching?
Yeah, if somebody sneaks in there skinny dipping, I don't know. But I used to, Bam Whitbeck, when he lived up here, and like Shirley Kidd, she used to, and her mother used to do their night bathing in there with a cake of soap and enjoy it. And Bam had a little raft up here, a float that he could float around on. You just don't do as much. I do have people here. We have, but it's my people, you know, my friends, not. So it's sad in a way. See, everybody wants Lakeville Lake to take care of, or Mount Riga. And when they sold this place across here, the first time they sold it, well, they'll show you how the properties change. Across from here was a Brazy house. And they sold, she died. Or he died in a nursing home. Oops, sorry. And I guess it went for like $9,000. And they fixed it up and sold it for $44,000. And then the next people that bought it put in a bush and sold it for $55,000. And then she died and he sold it for $90,000. And the last time around, I don't know what the exact price. I know that
wasn't there a trooper, one of our troopers?
Yeah, our future third selectman,
that's
I think.
Right, that's right.
Or first or second selectman, either one. But he sold it, and these people asked me over to tell me a little bit, for me to tell them about the house. But when they advertise it, I always say overlooking the pond, and I'm one. Realtor said, and beach privileges. I called the realtor and I said, where are the beach privileges for that place on Washington East Street then? And she said, oh, Mount Riga or Lakeville Lake. I said, thank you very much. And so it was, it's interesting.
Is it deep?
It's about 8 feet deep in the
really?
Center. Yeah. And, but it's very gradual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 400 feet around.
What's the bottom?
Well, at one time, this is what I would call a man-made pond because I put the dike in there,
mm-hmm.
and the brook used to go right through there. So it, the bottom is gravel, and it does have some springs in it. And
cold.
Mm-hmm. When the flood in '55 came, I didn't own that part. I only owned this to it. And my father said to me, "You better buy up that. Supposing somebody buys that up and fixes it up," and I said, "I don't have the money." And I went to Phil, and I said, "Phil, how much for the next acre and a half?" He said, $1,000. I said, "Well, I'll try to get it." Got the $1,000, and the next day, the Erickson probably would have given him $3,000, but he'd already sold it to me. And my father and everybody else, we did a lot of changing, and the Ericksons have made the pond. But I was lucky I did that, because I've had people come since who say, "Well, we'll buy down there and do a lot of landfill," and I don't think it's legally able to, but anyway, and then we could share the pond. I said, "No, I don't need to share the pond yet." So,
what do you mean the Ericksons were coming?
Well, they're the ones that built the pond for me.
They did. Oh,
yeah, they bulldozed, and Harold and Frank and Walt all made that pond. And when it went out, I had problems in the 55, no, in the 60-some flood. And they declared it when they were declaring every dam condemned. And it cost me, I had three choices, to make it like Boulder Dam with all the cement, or to open it up wide, which I'd have a gaping hole there with a muck pond, or to do what I did, put a dike there and put a pipe in from the brook so that it's not a flood threat. And the only way I could get that through the state was to hire, talk about politics, one of their engineers. And it was really Harold Erickson who told him how to do it. But it cost me $2,000 to get the state and this guy to get it approved. And then Harold said, "Well, the simple thing to do," and he drew up all these elaborate pictures of the trees and, you know, all this. I said, "That's fine, that's fine." And Harold says, "No, you just put a pipe, put a tile here, do this, do that, do the other thing." Oh, the guy says, "You think that'll work?" So, but Harold has made a lot of ponds. So, from experience, he knew, you know.
Do you think you could remember who lived in all these houses when you were a child? Do you remember names of them?
The Webbs lived here. The Malleys lived where Gertrude lives. Henshelock still lives where he did. The Whitbeck house is where Janet Swing.
Oh, that was the Whitbeck house. Okay.
Yeah.
Is she still on there?
Yes, Janet Swing's still there.
Oh, interesting. Well, I thought thought she was off Belko. Oh, I'm thinking of Atchley. Okay, all right.
And, of course, George Selleck had the mill and his house. And the little red house beyond that has always been known as the Carter House in the Philippines. And as I said, Junie Lovett lived in where the Pewter Pond people are now. And the gray house where Carl was known as the Farrell House.
Oh, Opie's mentioned that.
The Farrell House where John Higgins' grandparents. Evelyn
Higgins of the village store.
Yeah.
Okay.
His mother, Evelyn Higgins, she was a Lovett. Now was that a Farrell house? I don't know, but the Farrells and the Lovetts were related back there somehow. So, but that was always known as a Farrell house. And I think the Kiefer land has always been there. I don't remember all the houses. Jim Lamson bought this the same time. Around the same time, he rented and then he bought from Phil, I'm pretty sure. And I don't know what year that was. And I can't remember who lived there before that because they were our neighbors and that was it. We had come up. I was away then, too. But prior to the Ashman House, I lived in Lakeville in the Allen House. Allen House was next to Stuart Theater.
Oh, Ethan Allen House, yes. Now, maybe you know this. There's word people have told me this so many times and nobody can figure it out. I've been told that half of that house is somewhere on the Undermountain Road. No, on Belko Road. That it was cut in half years and years and years ago.
Well, when I lived there, we lived in the second floor. It had three rooms and a bathroom. And the biggest room was the bathroom. And then there was an attic. We had one bedroom down there, and the rest of us slept in the attic. And then downstairs, the Lorenzes lived there. They had 12 kids, and the Goldens lived there. They had 12 kids.
Not about at the same time.
No. So they're only the two apartments.
When was that?
That was in 1936. 37, 38.
Did your mother work?
My mother didn't work until we moved to the Ashman House, and she got a job at the White Hart as a waitress. But nobody worked in the 30s. But if you got to be poor in Lakeville, and live next to, well, prior to the Allen House, I lived in the Beehive. The Beehive's torn down now. It was behind the K&E.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that. Yes,
I'll tell you a story about that. Izzy Decker was the operator up there in the Holly Block, where Community Fuel is now. And the Beehive was called the Beehive because it was built peculiarly. Where we lived, it was three flights up. I mean, we had one room on top of the other, which was handy because it took a lot for my father to come upstairs to straighten kids out on the third floor. And but when he came, it was meaningful. And the Washingtons, and I think there were about four families living there. Very nestled in closely. But one time, and it was pretty run down, but Mrs. Fish was trying to sell it to some, I think, New Yorker. And accidentally, Izzy was listening in, and she said, "You'd love this old colonial overlooking a lagoon." A lagoon. Well, I guess Izzy fell off the stool. I don't know who else was working with her. But anyway, when I lived in the Beehive, overlooking the lagoon, it wasn't bad because we had a swinging bridge that went from very close to us. McHugh's had the livery stable there, which is gone. There was a boarding house, and across from that was the Gateway. And in those days, we called them summer people, not weekenders. And so the summer population, I think that's why the swinging bridge, because it was...
It was for the Gateway Inn people.
Yes, yeah. And the, you know, people on wouldn't have to walk all the way around. And the Factory Pond, because nobody was working, was an excellent skating place because everybody kept it cleared off in the winter. No matter how poor you were, we had skates, we had a sled, and we had a bathing suit. So we would swim all summer, and then it was not a bad life. And it was quite busy then because we had where the K&E was, is the Chinaman did the laundry. And the Harveys had a, the Lakeville Journal was over there. In addition to the Harveys had the fish and tackle. They used to make their own flies, employed a few people. The Holly Block had Doc Leverty's pharmacy. It had Hugo's, which was a Victrola place. And so we, looking back to be funny, that we were living condominium, you see. We had no upkeep because there was no grass to mow. Nobody had a car, so there wasn't anything to plow. And you could wander around there because we could sneak into the Stewart Theater. And the railroad station was quite active, and there was trains, and people could get off the train, and you had the summer people. And I can remember setting up carnivals for the Manor Girls, where Metz has fixed into an apartment, was a manor for, I don't know, I don't think they were camp kids from underprivileged, but I think they were rather Catholic kids. And they were city people, I think, so we used to gun them easily. We'd nail things to the board and have them throw balls at it, and if they knocked it off, they so my mother would make fudge and we'd sell it and that kind of thing. But people would, I think it was 11 cents Saturday matinee to go to the movies, but we could sometimes sneak in the back, and we were such pests that they used to let us in just to be quiet sometimes. And the guy, we used to call it a putt-putt, but he was the guy that checked the railroad tracks.
Yes,
that hand-operated. Yes, and he used to give the kids rides. So, and we had a trestle. So, and my father used to put rabbit traps along the railroad track, and we used to eat a lot of rabbit stew. My mother was an excellent cook. We ate a lot of rice. It's a wonder my eyes don't slant, but I like it to this day. Then one day I was swinging, I think, upside down on Leverty's rail there, and Miss Williams, Margaret Holly Williams, told me that wasn't dignified for a young lady, and I was also chewing gum. And she was sort of became my Mr. Higgins. She took me in and tried to make a lady out of me, and sort of adopted us kids. And she had a chauffeur. She never drove. She never worked either. So she had a lot in common with us. She used to take us G. Fox, my sister Kay, and I to do our school shopping. And one time she stopped in the bargain basement and picked up something for us which didn't last, and she met Beatrice Arbach face to face to tell her how bad bargain basements were and how it ripped off the poor people by misrepresenting quality. Didn't change, you know, bargain stores are still there, but that was Miss Williams. She used to she had a sandbox, Bill. I don't know why we needed that with all of Lakeville Lake, but we used to have to get all dressed up and go up there. And
so this was in the Holly Williams house?
Yes.
Yes.
She would play Tiddlywinks with us and read Winnie the Pooh. I guess she was lonesome. And we used to go for tea at Miss Coffin's house. I think the McDonald's lived there now. That wasn't so much fun, although I guess she did have horses, but Gertrude Drummond's was more fun because it was more for kids. She was a very grand lady. My sister Margaret's named after her, Margaret Holly.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, because she did so much for us. And it was really... And there's a Margaret Holly Williams fund at the hospital for certain things. So they called me about it, and I started to tell them the story. They said, "We just want to know, are you going to sign that this is okay?" "No," I said, "I got to tell you about Margaret Holly Williams." And she died in a four-bed ward at the hospital at 92, I think. And I was heartbroken, but she was blind and deaf and didn't know who I was. So I couldn't communicate to her. And there just were no beds at the inn. And
for this upsetting,
this dignified, wonderful, single lady who had done so much so quietly, really. She never... I think she was an inspiration to my mother. And my mother and father were always had class anyway. They were just poor. And I think Miss Williams was an example of how true ladies behave, and even though you have money, you don't flaunt it, you're just very dignified about it. True wealth, I think, in many ways. And one time, when Stuart Hoskins first took over the Journal, wrote some derogatory remark about the ragamuffins around the railroad station and around Stuart Theater and around that. And my mother stormed right down there and faced him, and there was a retraction the next week. He did not mean to say that anything bad about the kids. And that's a kind of spunk she had, and to be so young and to do all that kind of stuff. But she said, just because you're poor, you don't have to be dirty, you don't have to be impolite and all this stuff. So the other wonderful thing we had in Lakeville was the Jigger Shop, and that's where the laundromat is now. And Frances Lemoyne's parents, mother, ran that. And she was a wonderful, wonderful woman. And I had Miss Ham in the third grade, and we loved it because we had the best parties. Because she'd bring everything from the Jigger Shop. Now, I don't know why they called it the Jigger Shop. I think Lakeville's changed more than Salisbury, because we had the First National and the A&P and Casey's Market and Godrus's Market. I finally figured out what's a store and what's a market.
What's the difference?
Wealthy people go to a market and poor people go to the store, because the markets are more expensive. And now people say, well, I have to go to market. I say, well, you go to the market, and then I'll go down the store, pick up what I need. But we used to go when we could, to the First National or A&P. And Godrus's Market, even in those days, was way out of reach. Although we used to pester, they were characters, Louis. You remember the Godrus's?
That's the place where On the Run is now. And when I moved here 40 years ago this past summer, it seems to me the only thing in the window was a roll of brown butcher paper.
But Louis, in his older years, used to go there every day, even when it was closed, and wrap up things. And they must have had a high-quality market, because the brothers ran that for years and had tremendous customers. But I don't think they ever married. I'm not positive of all that, or ever had any...
One of them was alive when we moved here.
Yeah, I think it was Louis.
Mm-hmm. Now, where was the fourth one you mentioned? First National, A&P, Godrus's.
And Casey's.
Where was he?
Casey's Market was across from the Peking House, or whatever it is, the Chinese House now, where the First National was.
Oh.
There was a market there in the old Dufour building.
You say in the hub.
And so you know, we had a lot of activity there. We even had, Western Union.
That's right. You went up steps with the barbershop.
Paul Argle. Tembi Argle's a doctor at the hospital. And my sister used to babysit for Ollie, and I used to babysit for Tembi. And I'm not much older, but in those days it didn't take much to just, you know, it was, by the time you were seven, you could babysit. It was called benign neglect, I think. And so now I kid Tembi and Ollie, and I'd say, now, no, you two misbehave, because I call my sister. And so Tembi says, whatever you say. Tembi remembers a lot of the people. It's marvelous. He's a terrific memory. And it's nice to see. His father was the barber, and his father recently died, remember, in Florida. He was a wonderful man. I don't know, where does this go?
I start with the civil rights.
Well, we recently had a civil rights march. I say recently, it could have been in the 70s or whenever that was in vogue. And I wondered about that because I didn't think we had a problem. We had an equal relationship with the blacks or Negroes, as we said then. And but I have learned that the barbers would not cut the blacks' hair, and all of those families went to Poughkeepsie to get a haircut.
Mm.
So,
understandable then.
I guess yes. It was just nobody made anything about it. Whether they felt something, it wasn't voiced, I guess. It was just an acceptance. Everybody said, well, I'm going to Poughkeepsie to get a haircut. Mm-hmm. And since I didn't get haircuts, I never noticed that there was never one of the Folkses or the Palmers or those people who've been in town a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have so many streets then, and we had nickname streets. It wasn't Farnham Road. It was called Muck Alley, you know. And I kid some of the people that live in Farnham Road now. I say, don't kid me. I knew you when you lived in Muck Alley. Like Oogie said to me, you may call it Washington, but I know it's Lower Dump. That's in the dump was up here. And but Lakeville, when you think of it, in the 30s, was quite hectic. With all the markets, the schoolhouse was where the post office is now. I went to school there for 3 years. And in the Stewart Theater area was the post office, which then later Charlie had his TV station, the Godresses and the Jigger Shop and the busy railroad station, and the Holly Block being busy with Doc Leverty, and where the wine shop, now that same house was moved back, but that was Miller's Plumbing, and my father worked there with Bill Stanton and some characters, I'll tell you. He used to work at the Scoville Mansion up in Taconic. They were supposed to be putting in a furnace, and I don't know, Harry had gone somewhere, so he was going to see that the furnace was delivered. So the guys got drinking beer, I guess, and playing cards. It started to snow, and Harry came and he said, where's the furnace? So they scuffed, they had about an inch of snow, and they kept scuffing the snow and said they couldn't find it. So, but they had some wild times. Barnett Store was very busy. And a wonderful place, too, because Bill, everything was a layaway plan, and he sold everything from candy to dresses to threads of, spools of thread. And again, the kids would march through there and steal some candy, and he'd run them. And then there was a package store next to the First National, and I think Bob Constantine's father used to run that. And we'd collect beer bottles along the brooks and things like that. And he'd say, you're not supposed to be bringing these. I think you got 2 cents for returning beer bottles. And we'd hound him and hound him, and he'd finally give us the money so that we could go to the movies or do something like that. And then Lakeville Lake was a lot different. Bud Timmons, Charlotte Reed and I were talking about that the other day. They're so worried about Lakeville Lake. Bud Timmons used to drink out of it. It was so pure. You know, Charlotte was saying that in the spring. He said, this water is the cleanest water around. And it wasn't so fancy then. They had bathhouses there. And as I say, a lot of summer people. And the only places you could see in the lake were the Hotchkiss Boat House and the Hall Place, as we called it.
Charlotte Reed's house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it?
And that's about all you could see. The rest, the McChesney place would loom up, but you couldn't see down. And now you sort of see a lot, particularly on the right-hand side. All that seemed to be developed.